In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents A Voice of Truth and Inspiration, broadcasting on frequencies of love, laughter, and information, illuminating new paths for new directions as we, as one, strive for higher and higher planes of existence and a better understanding of ourselves and the world in which we live. Always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before. This is Life Changes with Filippo. And now your host, our MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. I am so excited about today's show because our guest today is Helena Mathiopoulos. And one would say, or some might think, that this is a departure from our normal programming. But I would say this is right on target because just as the song says at the intro to our show, feel the fear, set it free, change the world, be who you are, and all of that good stuff. Helena has a story from where she started to where she is, the journey in between, and what she's doing now. As a matter of fact, it's interesting that what she's doing now is very much involved in the world of opera, obviously, because she's an author and she's written for many magazines, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But, you know, I have to say that so many have been questioning whether the world of opera is relevant in today's world. And it's interesting because so many other people question whether rap music or country music is relevant in the world today, at least in their world. And obviously, when you look at it that way, there are many worlds happening simultaneously. Now, I have many feet, and I have one of each feet in so many of the worlds because that's how I love to live. And I love the opera. And when I'm in New York, I love to go to the opera and go to musicals. And when I'm in Los Angeles, I'll listen to reggae or I'll go to hear some of my friends or artists who are either rap artists or pop artists or alternative artists. And what I see is I see art in what is happening all around me. And better yet, we call it art. But what I see is an expression of the human spirit. And I believe that the expression of the human spirit is important for us to pay attention to in so many ways, and that the more we pay attention to each expression, the more we learn about each other, the less fear we have about each other, and the more we can get along and enjoy. And so it's interesting, I had the pleasure of meeting Helena in person and spending some time with her and having a delightful conversation. And I look forward to that not only on air right now, but again in the future, next time I'm in New York or next time she's in Los Angeles. But it's interesting that she opened up a part of the opera world that I really never actually paid attention to, yet another expression of the human spirit. You see, I started out in the opera world or in the music of opera by being, let's say, trained by my father. And trained is a really good word, but and so I wanted to use that. But in actuality, my father, with joy and love and fun, introduced me to operatic music and classical symphonic music. And I remember some of the most fond memories I have of my father growing up is when he would gather all us children into the living room where the phonograph or record player would be. And I remember he would play the records, his favorite artists, some of whom Helena has actually interviewed, who are now long gone. But he would play this music and we would sit there, and sometimes he would shut the lights and say, okay, what are you seeing? What is, because the composer is painting a picture that you can see, not just hear. So he taught us how to hear the rustling of the leaves in the orchestral piece we were listening to, and how the music was building, getting ready for a storm, or the waves of the ocean, or the calmness of the seas. It was all there. And we saw this with our eyes, in a sense, in our mind's eye, and we could hear it in the music. And it was one of the most beautiful trainings that we had, that we connected with what this artist connected with, and were able to understand his expression. Well, I got that. I got that from the music. I got that from the voice. And growing up and singing opera arias myself, I got that. But one of the things I never connected to was the costuming. Here is somebody or a group of somebodies entirely, in a sense, unrelated, yet very related to the person who wrote the music, to the person who designed the set, to the person who's playing the music, to the person who's conducting the music, and the person who's singing it. And then there's somebody else who has their expression, who puts their finger, they add their contribution to the expression of this art form, opera, which actually means work, and in Italian, and what a work it is when you, and grand opera in a sense that it's bringing all these art forms, all these expressions together. And so Helena has done a lot of things. She's interviewed a lot of people, had a lot of very interesting conversations, but her latest book brings fashion and opera together for those of us who never thought of it that way. And it's called Fashion Designers at the Opera. And so I look forward to not only bringing that expression of fashion and opera together in this conversation, but the expression of Helena herself as she is expressing herself in this world and evidently has since she was a child in Greece. I look forward to that conversation right after this.
Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWays ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWays ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. An ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWays water systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWays water systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Well, we're back. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and with this version of Life Changes with Filippo, we have a very special guest, Helena Mathiopoulos. Now, there is so much that can be said about Helena. From the moment she started out being born in Athens to then going off on her own as a young child living in London and starting her journalistic career after graduating from Pierce College, the American school in Athens, with a degree in medieval history, interestingly enough. She also graduated and continued her studies and learned several languages, six of them, actually. She's fluent in six languages. She was the fashion editor for The Tatler and The Daily Express, and then she joined the arts page of The Evening News. She was a regular contributor to The Sunday Times, Gramophone, Opera Now, and a regular columnist for the Saturday magazine of The Times. And currently she is international editor at large of Greek Vogue. Now she travels throughout the country and the world speaking on several different subjects. She has interviewed many fascinating, fascinating people, and including a fascinating person herself. I wonder if she's ever interviewed herself. But her latest book is called Fashion Designers at the Opera. We are pleased to have on our show Helena Mathiopoulos. Helena mou kitanis.
Hello, Kalaime. I'm very well, thank you. From a lovely sunny New York after two ghastly rainy days.
Indeed, indeed. It seems like I left New York at the perfect time.
Yes, absolutely. I love New York, but I would still always live in London, which is where I chose to live when I was 18 years old. Not quite the child you so kindly called me, but very young nevertheless.
Well, see, now that's an interesting place to start, because what would make an 18-year-old girl who lives in what a lot of people would consider paradise, with a very well-to-do family, one might say, and everything she had and she needed, and you left to be, in a sense, on your own to explore a big, big world as an 18-year-old girl in that era?
Yes.
I've been
wanting to do just that ever since I was 12, when I first went to my American school in Athens, because that opened up a totally different world. We had Thanksgiving plays and a theater society and off-curriculum activities, sort of a program totally different from the very boring, strictly academic curricula of most Greek schools, you see. And there and then, although I knew England because my grandmother was born in England, she was Greek, but she was born in England, I decided that the Anglo-Saxon world was the world I wanted to operate on. And I always wanted to test myself in the big wild world on my own. I didn't want people to sort of just categorize, because my family was really quite well-known and well-to-do, but I wanted to just sort of find out who I am and to find out how people would react to me.
You know, that is so fascinating, because so many people would say, my God, she had it all. Why would she leave? And that's what I would want. And yet you had it, and it's not what you wanted. You wanted something else. So
yes.
Talk about the human spirit expressing itself, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in a certain sense, you know, I was lucky because I didn't have to sort of look for what I wanted. What I wanted was very, very clear to me from a very young age, and there was very little deviation. I mean, I was going to either write or be in the theater, in the entertainment world. That's what I was good at, what I liked. I like the colorfulness and theatricality and glamour of the stage. And the books I've written because this book, Fashion Designers at the Opera, is my eighth book. The other books, and it's an illustrated book, whereas the other books are serious, you know, normal books, shall we say, were on conductors and opera singers and the biography of the King of Spain, etc. But they all sort of rather marry the writing, which is what I was born to do in a way, with the world of entertainment, which I love so much, and the artistic world. I mean, I'm not an academic, basically, although I studied medieval history. I'm a theatrical personality.
You sure are. And if anybody wants a treat, they should hear you speak live on any of these subjects, because your whole body gets into it, your whole essence.
Well, I mean, I had a lovely time the other day. Tuesday, I gave an illustrated talk at the Metropolitan Opera Guild here in New York, which was the main purpose of my trip. And it went very well. And the funny thing is, I enjoy these things so much. I mean, I never get nervous or sort of worried about them. I know that once I'm up there, I love audiences so much. And each audience is quite different, even though your subject is the same. So you kind of get a feel about them. There's a moment when all these people become one, and they have very specific characteristics as that night's audience. And I think all singers and actors feel the same.
You know, Helena, I don't know if all singers and actors know that they feel that way. You said so much in your very wise choice of words there, that you said that the audience, everybody becomes one.
Yes.
And you also said that that once you stand there, you know it's going to be okay. And that's saying a lot.
Well, you see, before everything is okay in any field, you've got to be very well prepared. You've got
Sure.
to know your subject, and you've got to have worked at it and sort of brush it off the last minute, because although you might give the same talk all over the world, you've got to find some freshness each time. And it's only when you are very well prepared that things go well, the miracle happens, and that's only when the audience do become one. Because if what you're doing is not good, if you're worried and insecure, then they would certainly not become one. They would just be, each person would be themselves. Karajan, the great Herbert von Karajan, the conductor who was the star of my first book, which is called Maestro, Encounters with Conductors of Today, he said that this is the Zen principle, that if something is very well prepared in the mind of man, then you have a chance of receiving the grace of the moment.
It's almost as if one other famous Greek person said, know thyself, wasn't that?
Yes, that was Gnosis Afton. That was Salis, I think, of Mili, or was it? Yes.
So if you know yourself, as you're saying, you know your subject and you're confident in yourself, then when you get out there, like you said, you almost throw it away and you just...
Yes, and you can hope for the grace of the moment. That's something extra that comes and lights the thing up.
And that's the magic. And that's the magic of life. It's exactly... I didn't know this is where the conversation was going to go to, but this is exactly it. This is what you do. When you walk around in life, this is what you do. Helena.
Well, the wonderful thing is I read the other day a wonderful saying, which I didn't remember, from Auntie Mame, the musical, where she said, life is a banquet, and all those poor suckers out of there are just starving, which means that they don't know how to make the best out of life or take what it gives them.
I'm quoting Greek philosophers, and you're quoting me, Auntie Mame. I love it.
Well, I thought one shouldn't be too chauvinistic, you know.
you know, Helena, I'd love to talk about some of the interviews that you've done. I know you've interviewed some very, very famous people who are ultra famous and some of them who are ultra gone now as far as they're in another dimension. What do you, those people that came, did their thing, became famous, and left. What can you say about them? Did they come for that purpose, or did you know? There's something I think you have to say on that subject.
Yes, I'm sure that. I mean, they're not here to speak for themselves, but I'm sure they had an enormous sense of destiny and purpose and direction. And of course, that's why the greatest of them all, their work remains. Because as St. John says, and Brahms chose these wonderful words for his Requiem, the German Requiem, he says that let them rest from their labors, for their deeds shall follow them. And you get it with Maria Callas, you get it with Karajan and Bernstein and the greats in music. They remain, and their influence on music remains. I mean, the Callas revolution that she brought to opera, that is what has enabled it to thrive in an era of cinematic criteria and televisual criteria of dramatic credibility. Because she turned opera at a stroke into totally searingly relevant contemporary living theater, which it was not before. Before, it used to be vocally resplendent most of the time, but dramatically ridiculous. And if that had continued that way, with people just standing up there in the front, waving handkerchiefs and sort of giving you two or three standard operatic gestures, opera would indeed be dead now. But it's not, thanks to her. And then conducting, the art of conducting was totally sort of codified, if you like, by Herbert von Karajan, particularly, who united the very inspired, very spiritual, but technically a bit vague approach of Furtwängler with the technical brilliance of Toscanini. And that is what has created the modern style of conducting and has led to a generation of virtuoso conductors, if one could use the term.
Helena, I have to ask you, first of all, that's fascinating, and I didn't know that. Thank you for sharing that. I have to ask you, were there people at the time that said, oh, this Maria Callas, or oh, this Herbert von Karajan, they're ruining the world of opera?
Yeah, well, there were some people who loathed Callas's voice because some of the sounds she made in order to make the dramatic impact she wanted were quite ugly. And, of course, with Karajan, he was very envied, and they said that he wanted to dominate the world, although he was the first person to put that sort of hitherto unknown idea of co-productions between various opera houses, which are now the norm in operatic life, because he figured out that, there was for each work, if there was, one ideal cast. And there was no point in the houses competing for getting them. That they should cooperate in one production and book the same cast who could then travel all over the world. And, of course, now it's the norm. But then they said he wanted to become the emperor of the world, you know. Every great personality is always controversial and always will create some animosity. It's standard, you know, people are human. But it's and of course, sometimes they're quite hurt by it, but they accept it as part of the thing. You know, if you want to make your mark in the world, there will be some people who won't like what you're trying to do, and that's all there is to it. And all of us experience it. I mean, I've experienced it as well in a small way. But you've got to just carry on if you believe in what you're doing.
Helena, these are such important words. How perfect that you're sharing this with us today. And so even in something as traditional, as steeped in tradition as opera is, and as seemingly conservative and all, is there still room, in your opinion, for another Callas to come and do something else, or another von Karajan to do something just as great?
But I don't think that it's all that necessary, in the sense that opera has been transformed. And along with Callas, you see, Callas was very lucky to live at a time where very great directors such as Wieland Wagner and Luchino Visconti were working. So together they kind of transformed opera into living theater. And since then, the importance of the director in opera has risen and risen and risen. And that's why you get spectacles that are very, very relevant to today, and sometimes even, you know, the plot is kind of set in a contemporary setting, sometimes with great success, sometimes not, but nevertheless, this movement has been so relevant and has really resulted in younger audiences, for a start, and in opera being really reborn. And in New York, I mean, New York and America, in a sense, were the last to join this sort of great director's opera movement. But since the advent of Peter Gelbert, the Metropolitan, I mean, he's a totally visionary innovator. He propelled it right to the forefront of what is going on in opera. He started these wonderful HD, Live from the Met performances, which go to, I think, massive 2,800 cinemas all over the world.
Wow.
And they're attended by so many young people. So it's really fantastic. But, of course, there'll always be room for new geniuses. There always is. There aren't all that many born every day. Sadly.
I had a question in my head, and that last comment just threw me off.
Oh, you mean you forgot about it? It happens to me all the time.
Helena, of all the people you interviewed, I know you have some favorites. We talked about them, but which one would you want to bring up now, and why? You've already mentioned some.
I already brought up Herbert von Karajan, because he, through interviewing him, which I did very extensively several times for the book, and through watching him, it changed my life. His whole attitude to art and to everything taught me so much, really taught me 2/3 of what I know about the way I work. And then, of course, for the latest book, Fashion Designers at the Opera, I absolutely adore Christian Lacroix and Zandra Rhodes, who works in San Diego, because they're the most inherently theatrical of all the designers. And they also happen to be absolutely enchanting people. Very humble, because all great people are really humble, because they don't have to prove who they are. They just are great.
And
Sandra lives down the road from you in San Diego, and two of the best operas she did were The Magic Flute and The Pearl Fishers. She did for San Diego, and after that it traveled to San Francisco and other places. And her Aida traveled to San Francisco, so it's right up your shore.
Indeed. Actually, I used to be on the board of the San Diego Opera, so I'm really happy to have seen that in your book. And actually, I enjoyed, I had the pleasure, how many people have this pleasure, of being able to sit there and look at your book and talk about your book while standing or sitting with you.
While I was having breakfast.
While having breakfast, indeed.
And people can make of that what they wish.
Oh, Helena.
you can clarify that we were guests at a mutual friend's in New York at the same time.
Oh, you had to clarify it. But as I was looking at some of these images, you know, one of the questions crossed my mind, I suppose, because I was raised with some traditionalists, and I used to hear comments like, oh, that shouldn't be that way, or it shouldn't have been that way. And so were some of these exquisite, I have to say, fashion designs that you share in your book, were some of them detracting from the operas themselves?
Oh, no, I don't think so, because on the contrary, a good costume designer should enhance what the opera is trying to say and what each character is about. As Placido Domingo, whose biography I've also written, told me at the time, I mean, a costume can actually teach you automatically, the moment you put it on, how to walk, how you should move, you know, if it's the right costume. And Nelly Miricioiu said exactly that about Karl Lagerfeld when she worked with him on La Rondine at the Monte Carlo Opera. She said that the moment she put her costume on, she had the character.
Wow.
You see? And so that is the whole point of a sensitive costume designer, is that the translator in visual terms of the director's, and if the director's good, that means the composer's vision of what he was trying to create when he wrote this opera and those particular characters.
You know, Helena, I'm about to mention my father, who both my parents were born and raised in Sicily, right across the river, the water. The great ocean. But as they say about the Sicilians and the Greek, una fazza, una razza, or something
exactly.
like that.
And
right?
Southern Italy as well.
So I would imagine that maybe you had some of these same words growing up. But in my case, when I used to dress a little differently or a departure from what my parents expected, they would say, look at you, are you a this or are you a that, dressing like that. So dressing as we dress, whether we're on the opera stage or the world stage or walking around the street, as we dress is how we express ourselves, is expressing who we are as well.
Exactly. Exactly, and that's the whole point. I mean, I'm a clothesaholic, and I'm not a clothesaholic simply because I love clothes or just because of vanity, because you would look just as good, presumably, if you chose well in last year's dress as in this one's. But that's not the point. The point is that you have to express yourself just as you're evolving and the mood of the moment. And that's why fashion is so wonderful, because it constantly evolves, and it can keep pace with very fast development and movement in our lives and in ourselves.
You know, I remember as a boy when the artist Madonna became more famous and girls all over the world started dressing like her, saying they had to be themselves and they were expressing themselves, when in actuality that could be true, but it also could be that they were expressing Madonna. So
yes, the desire to be like her, that's what they were expressing.
Right, so I wonder how it is that people can find that self-expression through fashion without imitating anybody. You don't seem like you've ever imitated anybody.
I have once in my life when I was in my mid-teens. I was about 15, 16 when Jackie Kennedy became First Lady. And at the time, I imitated her like crazy. I mean, everything she wore, I had it copied. Can you imagine a 16-year-old wearing long gloves and those satin dresses? But that, of course, was just before the mini era. So we were all dressing much more like adults when we were teenagers and wanted to, rather than now mothers wanting to dress like their daughters.
Oh, wow.
It was very different. But anyway, I did imitate her like crazy. I thought she was my ideal of elegance and style and glamour and sort of class. And I think she still remains it. I don't think there would be anybody else. I've never come across anybody else whose style all over, like every appearance, you think, oh, God, that's perfect. It's perfect for her and for the role she has to play and everything. No, I thought she was unsurpassable.
So maybe there was purpose in your imitating her. It did serve?
Perhaps, because I do like a sort of regal dimension very much. really, okay, very much. I am an actual monarchist, an ardent monarchist anywhere. But apart from that, and she had that very regal stature. I mean, she wasn't just a first lady. She had something queenly about her.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. So maybe in a sense, those young ladies imitating Madonna helped them express something.
Yes, they wanted to be. It's a pop culture, you see, very much a pop culture. And a lot of teenagers would love to be glamorous pop stars, you know.
Hmm.
It's a different kind of thing to emulate. Well, personally, I wouldn't want to imitate or to be a pop star if you paid me. But most teenagers do these days.
Interesting. Well, Helena, we could do like we did over breakfast and talk for hours, but we're going to have to take a quick break. But I'd love to come back and talk some more if you have the time. Just a few more minutes afterwards. Okay, very good. Mm-hmm. This is Filippo Voltaggio and Life Changes with Filippo. We're talking to Helena Mathiopoulos about her book, Fashion Designers at the Opera. But actually, we're talking about life and so much more with her. If you want to learn more about her, do go to Life Changes with Filippo.com, that's F-I-L-I-P-P-O, and click on her name, click on her picture, click on the show. You can listen to this again, but you can also click on the link where it'll send you to buy either this book or any of her other 7 books, or 8 books. Looking forward to continuing our conversation right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening. Someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
We're back. I'm Filippo, and I'm having a delightful conversation with Helena Mathiopoulos. I just love her last name. It's Greek, of course, and she is so much just a lovely, delightful lady who's an author, who's been an editor and is an editor for Vogue and many other magazines and newspapers. She is here talking to us about her book, Fashion Designers at the Opera, and actually all of her books, which you can learn about by going to lifechangeswithfilippo.com. Helena, this book, in a sense, talks about the past and some of the greats of the past and current. What might it say about the future, or how can it help direct us in the future?
Well, I think that it talks very much about the present, because the trend of fashion designers designing for the opera is a very recent phenomenon. It's of the last 20 years. Before that, some of them had designed a lot for the ballet, but the involvement with opera began in 1980 with Karl Lagerfeld and Armani, and then has continued unabated to our own day. And the last people to venture on the operatic stage are Victor and Rolf, a very, very avant-garde, a very young duo based on Paris and Amsterdam. So opera obviously presents them with a great lure. And I think that the reason is because opera has changed so much in our day, as I said a minute ago, to become believable theater. And fashion has changed so much. I mean, fashion is approaching and has approached the world of costume. I mean, in the old days of couture, you know, people, couturiers, designers presented their collection to a very small select audience in Paris, sitting in gilt chairs in a little salon, and that was it. And the clothes were made, there were real clothes for real women. Now, fashion shows are enormously theatrical spectacles and extravaganza, you know, fantasy and, exaggeration that has very little to do with real life. Indeed, some of the clothes shown are not even meant to be made, let alone worn, you know. But they sort of set the mood for what a designer wants to express with that collection, you see. So the two worlds have approached each other enormously in the last 20 years, completely unselfconsciously. I don't think opera set about to lure fashion designers on its stage, nor did fashion designers suddenly say, oh, I'm aiming to design for the opera. But the fact that this fortuitous conjunction of change brought them to the two together.
Wow. You are opening up my eyes to things that I never thought about. You're absolutely right. The fashion...
Oh, I mean, if you saw a Galliano collection or Lacroix collection, or in fact, in the speech that I gave on Tuesday at the Metropolitan Opera, I showed them, among all the costumes, two designs which everybody assumed were costumes for the opera. They were not. They were couture dresses from their shows. Because they were so theatrical that really you wouldn't know the difference.
Wow.
And for me personally, of course, this book has meant a lot because I'm a clothesaholic and I live through opera and love the opera. So it kind of brought my two passions, my overruling passions of my life together. Wow. And that's why I love doing it so much. I hated finishing it.
I mean, wow. You certainly were and are aligned with everything that you're talking about here. And I'm wondering if this fantasy that the fashion world is going to, and obviously that opera does elicit some of, are we looking for more fantasy? Do we need more fantasy in our real life?
I think we definitely do, because if you look, I mean, from the point of view of dress, now we're concentrating on dress, if you look at the way most people dress these days, it's totally uniform for the most part and very, very drab. It's jeans and a T-shirt or variation or sort of sneakers and sort of track suits. And if you just look at the people at an airport, it's enough to give you eye ache. I don't know why people look so deliberately ugly when they travel, but they do. It's really lamentable. Whereas in even two decades ago, I mean, people dressed up for airplanes because you didn't know who you were going to meet, and also because you were very conscious that you get better treatment if you're very well dressed.
Mm.
And I think it's a reaction against this drabness. And to an extent, it's deliberate. And to an extent, it's sort of imposed by circumstances. Because a lot of people always complain to me, both in London and here, about the fact that audiences at the opera sometimes are not well-dressed and they're in jeans or unchanged or whatever. And I say, well, what can they do? People work till 6, 6:30. They don't have time to go home, take a bath and change like some people do or how most people did a while ago. Life is different. So, I mean, unless they have the forethought to say, well, look, tonight I'm going to the opera, let me take something at the office that I could change or adapt my outfit for the evening, then they have to come as they are. And I would much rather they come as they are rather than they don't come, if you see what I mean.
And Helena, this is interesting because what you just said takes me to exactly what I was thinking, because having met you and spent time with you, you are very real. You would look and be the same person in a potato sack, excuse the expression.
Oh, then... no, I would not. You're very charitable.
But you know what I mean, and I know you don't judge people by what they wear and all of that. So in one sense, it's very important.
I don't judge them ever by what they wear, but I do understand them by what they wear. I mean, what you wear says a lot about you, And it says a lot about how you see yourself and how you would like, if you think about it, other people to see you. I would never presume to judge somebody by their clothes, but I would know the degree, shall we say, certainly the degree of their self-love and self-esteem, if nothing else.
You know, Helena, this is a perfect question to ask you, being an editor for Vogue and also especially for this book that you've just written, Fashion Designers at the Opera, and the fact that you are around so many people that can afford to dress well or might have people to help them dress. Let me ask you, of the average person, based on all that we've talked about, the average person that would say, oh, I would love to dress like that, but I just can't afford it, or my lifestyle doesn't allow it, yet there still is something about the way they dress that says something else sometimes, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think in America, there's no excuse for, in the big cities anyway, for people not being well-dressed if they want to, because you have the most amazing thrift shops and designer resale shops in the world. I mean, what you can find in America is unbelievable, and the prices are to die for us Europeans. So, I mean, if you have imagination and you have taste and you know yourself, you can dress very well with very little money in America.
Well,
it's
and this is interesting
that way.
Because sometimes we say something and we make an assumption, but it's not based on fact. And maybe underlying all of what we're saying sometimes is that I don't feel comfortable, even if I could afford it, or
that's the thing, or not knowing yourself, not really knowing
right. What
to choose, or choosing boringly, or just a laziness, a plain laziness, you know.
Right.
And some people just don't care. They're born that way. They don't care very much about clothes. But the point is, everybody has to put something on in the morning every day of their lives. So why not take a little thought and care that whatever you're wearing, whether it's a T-shirt or a pair of jeans or a sweater, choose a color that suits you, a cut that maybe has something different, something, you know, that just says something about you that is more sparkling than somebody else.
and be our individual selves.
Yeah.
Well, Helena, besides the clothes, to me, 18 years old is still a young girl, and you knowing at 12 years old that you wanted to leave Greece and be part of another world.
It hasn't changed much.
what advice? I mean, you've given a lot of great jewels here, gems, as to how we can start living our lives more authentically ourselves. What would you say is one of the leading thought processes that has guided your life overall?
Well, it's not new at all. I mean, it's just be yourself always, and as we have one life, strike out for your dreams, for what you want, and take no notice of anybody else in achieving that. Even if you have to be cruel, neglectful of other people, in order to be yourself and fulfill yourself, you have to do it. Because as an unfulfilled person, you wouldn't be much good to them anyway.
Wow.
You've got to sort of say, this is what I want to do in life, and give it every ounce of juice. And if you succeed, fine, and the odds are that you will if you give it every ounce of juice you have. But and if you don't achieve everything, because I don't think utter perfection exists on Earth at least, but you can come to a very close approximation. Whereas if you begin with approximations, then you will end with approximations of approximations and be very far from where you wanted to be.
Wow, I have had so much fun with you today. I can't wait to do it again. I'm coming to New York a couple times in the next couple of months. I will call you, and I look forward.
Well, I won't be in New York the next couple of months. I will be in London.
Oh, no. Okay,
no,
then
I come to New York about twice, three times a year, but my home is in London. Well, and I also go to Greece three times a year for a month.
And we're going to have to find a way to get
you've
you
got to
into
find me wherever I am.
Or find you a way to get to Los Angeles or San Diego or
one
of those.
Oh, that I would love. I would love. I mean, I know Zandra and other friends are trying to organize to see if I can come and speak anywhere, you see, to make the trip possible.
Excellent, because it's always a delight to hear you speak. Helena, I am so happy that we got to talk about your book, Fashion Designers at the Opera.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
This has been delightful. Thank you for taking the time, and I'm honored with how you walk in this world. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
Okay, ciao, ciao, Helena.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That has been so much fun. We'll be right back with a special producer segment with our guest producer, Will Peterson, right after this. Ciao.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
And we're back. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and today our guest producer on this producer's wrap is Will Peterson. He is not only my dear friend, but a brand consultant, a life coach, and a budding social entrepreneur. Actually, I might add, he is also very much an opera buff and a fashion buff. So how perfect that you're here today. Will, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Filippo. It's delightful to be here.
Wasn't she delightful?
She absolutely. And I'm so jealous of your breakfast with Helena because I can imagine that, you know, as charming and delightful as she is, you know, virtually, as it were, you know, having the opportunity to meet her and be next to her has to be amazing.
Oh, it's so much fun. Going through her book and saying, what's this? And who would do this? And wow, I really like that. And as a matter of fact, I wrote down some quotes from the book that I wanted to keep because it just, I mean, there is such a reflection on the way we could live life.
Well, indeed, and you know what she's kind of documenting. There's so much that she says, and it's so rich, and there's,
I know,
yeah, there's so many grains of wisdom there. But you know, the thing, you know, she, as a person who invented herself,
yes,
and chose, you know, stuck to her path and did all of these exciting things in a moment that probably wasn't that easy for her. But she was courageous and brave, and what a great lesson for all of us that, you know, in passionately loving what it is that we have a preference for or like, we can create amazing individualships for ourselves. You see what I mean?
I do. I do. And you know, that's just when I was saying to her that she could just wear a potato sack. Of course, she would not. But just the fact that she just is herself, and you know she's there, and it's not in an obnoxious sort of way, like I'm trying to let you know who I am. She just is.
Right.
And you want to walk into her space. Do you know what I mean? You want to engage her. It's not like she's in your face. And that just, to me, is the difference between an ego trying to get people to see them and someone who's just knows who they are and people want to see them.
Right. It's her point about great people are humble because they don't have to try. They just are. And I think, you know, in all of us wanting, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody, wanting so desperately to be liked and doing everything to be liked, but that's not the point, is it? The point is by knowing what we like and being who we are, we're naturally adored.
And, you know, and I'm glad you say that, and I appreciate your honesty. And I wonder, some of these people who are, quote-unquote, considered great in our society, who they don't seem to be humble, and some of them maybe are not. And so the question is, are they actually great, or are they a product of marketing and advertising and that kind of thing? So,
well, you know, that's a slippery slope, and I don't think we can ever really know, and you know, because we don't want to judge, and we're not inside these people's heads, and we just don't know without having, you know, a personal experience of them. And I think, you know, what you could say about Madonna, or I don't know, the Kardashians, let's say, you know, we don't know. We don't have the privilege of being inside their heads. We can only...
Privilege? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't want to be there. Well, let's say the privilege of knowing them somewhat intimately and understanding, you know, so the point is maybe, well, if we know our own motivations, then that's okay, because maybe you remind me of something else, because it's like, how often in judging somebody we say, oh, what an egoist, or how selfish you are. But if we were actually more selfish about what it is that we want and who we are, instead of maybe that's the point of, well, I am great and I don't really care what you think of me because I'm just brave and I'm living bravely and courageously and splendidly. Mm. Maybe?
Maybe. And actually, how many times have we seen somebody that's so well-dressed in a regular atmosphere and say, wow, you shouldn't be dressing like that here? And I don't mean regular atmosphere. I mean, like, you know, just at the store or whatever. It's like, are you going someplace? Or actually, I remember being dressed in a suit because I worked in a suit at IBM every day, and arriving someplace where people don't wear suits all the time and having somebody say, did you just go to a wedding? Ha, 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 because that's how they attributed a suit. Sure. And kind of being teased for being dressed in what was normal for me.
Right.
So what am I getting at?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure either.
You know, the thing is, we don't know. We don't know why somebody's wearing that particular shirt or wearing a suit or wore their prom dress to the opera, God forbid. But, you know, we live in a society of conformity. So any moment that somebody's exceptional or different is a challenging moment for the norm, whatever that might be. So why can't we all just be different all the time?
You know, Will, I know you have had these moments, but I'm going to make a big
assumption.
Right. Because I think back, and thankfully we didn't have so much videos and cameras available at that time for me to be photographed in some of the things that I've worn as a child, you know, taking things out of, you know, context, so to speak, and putting it together. And I think back and I say, oh, God, I would never be caught dead in that today. But I think that in order to be who I am today, not that I dress, whether I dress well or not well, in order to feel myself, I had to go through these maybe exaggerated processes.
Well, it's experimentation, isn't it? You know, well, there's two parts of that. It's like, well, we follow the lead of somebody else, and this is in fashion, so we wear these things, you know, whether or not it was a good idea at the time. And the other side of that is like, well, we want to try, and part of the journey of figuring out who you are and what you like is, well, saying, well, today I'm going to wear this black leather jacket and pretend I'm a biker, and today I have the persona of a biker, and that can inform your own creation of yourself. So, you know, more power to you. You just look back 10 years from now and say, oh, I can't believe I wore that. So what? We all did it, you know? Everybody makes a mistake now and then.
I didn't. Only once.
Oh, and so you're perfect, of course.
No, but I'm thinking back on a particular time now when I was wearing something at a big party that my uncle and aunt were throwing. And it was in this big hall, and they had all their friends there and all this family. And my uncle came up and told me to take it off. It was a scarf. It was just a scarf. But he said, you know, I think you might want to take off your scarf. People are talking. And if I look back, what a silly thing to be wearing was a scarf at that kind of an event on that kind of a warm day. But for some reason, I wanted to feel something, and I would not take it off.
It was theatrical.
As
Helena might say.
Helena would have been proud.
You know, and who cares? Or you wanted to wear the scarf. Good for you.
Well, but now I think if I had a nephew on the one hand, and I'd say, you know, if he's wearing something that I'm almost inclined to say, you know, you might not want to wear that. Because not because people are going to laugh, but because fashion-wise, it doesn't really work. But then again,
but who are you to say?
Who am I to say?
And who, yeah.
And
how do we know?
Doesn't even say, right?
No.
Editor for Vogue, Greek, international Greek, whatever. She's not saying. She's like, I loved what she said. She said, I wouldn't judge, but it tells me a lot about their...
Right, exactly. And, you know, maybe we don't understand everything at this moment, but in the future, in hindsight, in retrospect, it kind of was like, oh, well, now I understand. And maybe wearing that scarf wasn't the best idea for a variety of reasons, or maybe it wasn't good for you for doing it, no?
Or maybe it was because it helped me develop the character or something.
Of who you are. You were being theatrical. And, you know, even her example, you know, we could take Marie Callas. I don't think Marie Callas was necessarily understood, and she could have been, and probably, and was, vilified by a lot of people. Mm. You know, that's what happens when you take a risk and are brave, isn't it?
Yeah.
But without that, where's innovation?
I know that Maria Callas was called a lot of names, and whether she was some of what she was called or not, look how she's spoken about now by so many, and whether they liked her art or not, there's something about it that helped change something for the better for some people. Mm-hmm. And whether she knew that at the time, if she was truly being her authentic self, and that's kind of what it's going to, how we ended with Helena.
Sure.
Being our authentic self, and how do we be that?
Well, we just be, don't we?
That's why you're here for the answer to that. How do we be that? We just be.
Isn't that the answer?
Yeah, and yet at once people are looking outside of themselves to how to be, and some people are looking inside.
Right, so then what you really actually want to say, this all goes back to self-love, doesn't it? You know? See? I love myself, and I love every aspect of myself, including the awful scarf I chose to wear to that party.
And you know, it's interesting that as I think about that party, as a child, I wore a lot of hand-me-downs, so I wore things that people made fun of, but I wasn't wearing them by choice. So it was interesting that I was balancing, without making this connection at the time, in a sense, by saying, you can make fun of me, at least I'm wearing this by my choice.
Sure.
You know, and there's a big difference there.
Yeah.
So, in a sense, there's a way of living our lives that way of, it doesn't matter if you make fun of me or it doesn't matter what you think, if this is truly bringing me joy. But the question is whether it's, what is that joy? Is it truly from our heart or from our ego? And there's the rub.
That's what we don't know, and we can never know. But I think, you know, let's go back to Callas's example. You know, she moved us with her authenticity and her great artistry and her willingness to commit to her own self-expression. So did anybody ever doubt her authenticity? And that, you know, did they? No. It's just beautiful, and it's moving. And I think that's the magic and the miracle, as Helena would say, of transcendent art. So but we can do that in life too, can't we?
And so we are. And so we are, and we have through this show. I am so grateful to Helena Mathiopoulos for being on the show with us today, and Will. I am grateful for you, period, and for being on the show. This is a great conversation, and what a perfect conversation to have after speaking with Helena. So with that, that brings us to the end of this segment, brings us to the end of this show. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and along with our producers, Dorothy Lee Donahue and Mark Legere, we thank you all for being part of this show and part of this beautiful life that we are all part of. With that, ciao, everyone. Until next time.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network, and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. Change the world. Now's the time. Now's the time.